Hey Potters, welcome to episode 88 of Cospod, the podcast for all things cosplay and costuming for that matter. We cover all things. And a shout out to our friends over at Planet Cosplay who recently contacted us. Hey guys, I will be fixing that issue on our website. I couldn't say it, but I was actually out of town all weekend. So that's why I haven't fixed it yet.
We're busy.
Potters, that's also why I haven't put up my Warbla live stream that I did last weekend, because I was out of town and I didn't have access to anything. I didn't realize this, but apparently if you post that you're going to be out of town online and somebody robs you, insurance companies can now deny your claim because you basically announced that you were not home.
Mm-hmm. You announced it to the world in a sense, even if you have all the privacy settings up. So yeah.
Exactly. So it was like, now I can't say anything about where I'm going to be at any time if I'm going to be out of the house. So I couldn't like say anything. So that's why I haven't done anything. But speaking of more cosplay related things, let's go ahead and give our updates for the last 2 weeks since the last time you guys saw us on the show. Val, I believe you've been a very, very busy bee.
I don't know if I've been busy because my life has kind of taken odd, funny directions. This weekend, I've been really busy because I've been doing a ton of freaking hand embroidery. I've been working on my Amidala costume. She has this very intricate headpiece going on. And unfortunately, the technique that I was originally going to do for this required me to create a bunch of stamps and then burn the pattern into the fabric. However, every single one of the little fabric things she has on her head is different. It required me to make anywhere from 20 to 25 unique stamps. I don't have the patience or the money to do that. So I decided to go with this interesting embroidery technique that I learned that kind of gives this faux burnout look to it. So I've been doing that all weekend as well as beading, and I'm still in the process of that. And actually, I can show you guys. Ta-da! It looks really weird on the camera because of the lighting, but it looks really pretty, I promise.
I was going to say, if you turned it just like 90 degrees, the little two black beads look like eyes. So it looks like one of those cutesy little things you'd see in Japan at one of the cafes.
I know, and it's even more creepier because I'm putting flowers around them. So it's like, yeah, it's I promise, it looks way better in person. It's just the lighting with the camera. I apologize. But this is what I've been working on. Val has been busy job hunting and finding a new job in her free time. So she hasn't had a whole lot of opportunity for cosplay. But that's essentially all I got. How about that?
That's still something.
It is something, yes. I just wish I was more productive. Because it's like we're a month away from ACON and I still got to get all my panel material together. And I'm like, oh, fudge. There's so much to do. No time to do it. Oh, and my Christmas did come a little bit early because as many of you know, I approved the use of Christmas falls in cosplay products. And I bought 2 dozen of them from Amazon recently in various sizes and shapes for my Fu costume because she has a lot of very oddly sized gems that are circular. So I've got 24 Christmas balls ready at my disposal. I'm pretty much covered for the next 5 years of cosplay. So there's my Christmas present to myself. Amber gives a thumbs up.
Two thumbs up.
Hey, you know what? I figure with Texas being the way it is, it's difficult to resin cast successfully. And I've never had good luck with it. It's been decent for the smaller gems, but when you need something like 4 to 5 inches in diameter, you just cannot trust Texas weather to be consistent enough. So it's like, you know what? Plastic Christmas balls. It's already the circular shape. It's already cut in half. I just need to paint the inside. Done.
I would almost be tempted to get an easy bake oven to speed the process of resin casting and to keep the humidity level down. Because you would never have to eat out of the oven. And it's the perfect size to have just a little, maybe 6x6, 8x8 at most, little mold that you could just stick in there and turn it on and just go. And if for some unknown reason it blew up, they're cheap enough that you wouldn't be out a ton of money.
That's not a bad idea. Maybe we should just
get to it. Get an easy bake oven for resin casting.
This is something we should probably test. I'm curious now.
I come up with the worst ideas when I'm tired.
But if you think about it, that's not such a bad idea. My concern would be if you happen to use, like, what type of mold that you make. If it's a rubber mold, probably not a good idea. If it's a silicone mold, you might be okay.
I had silicone in mind. Or plaster, which you could definitely put into heat because there's no moisture in it.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I dislike about doing hard molds when it comes to resin is that they're a butt to pop out. That's why I prefer soft molds.
Those are for single use.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, I don't like single use if I have to make like 20 gems.
Incidentally, pro tip, guys, if you do end up making a plaster mold and you can't get your cast out, don't break mold. Done that. It does not work out well for your casting.
No, it doesn't.
Use baking soda and water. It actually will dissolve the plaster. There's some sort of chemical reaction where it bonds with the sulfur present in the plaster. And it looks really cool. It effervesces. Just like Alka-Seltzer.
This is to say, yeah.
The things you do for science, my landlord didn't have to know.
Yeah. That's what's so cool about cosplay. It's bridging all these things that I should have learned in school, but I didn't, such as science and math.
I learned a lot of both.
While cosplaying.
No, it was in school.
Oh, well, my school did a really crappy job of teaching me, so I learned through cosplay.
You know, whenever they have those charts on the walls that say, when am I ever going to use this? Cosplay was not one of the listed items on that checklist, and it needs to be. I'm going to get a little magic marker and add it to the bottom. And then I'm going to check all the way across the board.
Yeah, there's so many things that I wish if I could go back and talk to my teachers and be like, is there any way you can like use this in real world applications? Because they just kind of taught straight from the book, and it's like, when am I ever going to use this? And I think of all the math that I do now. And it's like, man, if I had spent even a fraction of the time learning in geography and algebra and geometry and all this crap, and it's like, you could have told me that I could have used this in my crafting or that I could have used this doing other things, but you just taught straight from the book. Now I feel like a complete failure in life.
Which, incidentally, I'll mention this at the end, but there was something in the news that had to do with fabric and geometry that I'll mention here in a little bit.
Oh, goody.
but since the last time I was on the show, I was frantically prepping for my IT exam, which thankfully I did pass. I'm like the only surprised person on the planet at that news.
I don't know why you keep being surprised, because you know you study your butt off.
I do study my butt off. At the same time, that was an exam that has a very large failure rate. So it was eminently possible. I mean, that is the gold standard of security exams. I was lucky to pass it. Thankfully, I never have to take it again.
There you go. Applause.
So I celebrated with Pizza Hut because it takes such little things in life to make me happy. You know, Pizza Hut is a luxury for me. So I had Pizza Hut that day and I was very happy. And it's just kind of been decompressing from the massive mental effort that was, since I also just had a symphony concert over this past weekend that I also had 40 minutes of music that I had to learn very, very quickly in a couple of days. So I just had massive mental exertion over the last 2 weeks, but I did still manage to get some cosplay in there, which I have been striving to do during my few waking hours when I'm not working. So I've been working on Pyrrha's armor, which I don't have with me. It's sitting right over there on my ironing board because I put masking tape to hold it in a curved position just so gravity won't try and open it up for me. My live stream, I will put up as the after session so that you guys can watch. I did stream it publicly, but I think I need to release it on YouTube so that you guys can go and watch it again. It was more of not quite an unboxing, but a, here is my first experience with Warbler, here are my impressions, tips and tricks kind of thing. So hopefully you guys find that useful. I'm still working on the armor. I've found that I don't like Warbler as an armoring material. And yes! I knew...
Ah,
Google effects, you know, applause thing.
I won! Yes!
No, the primary reason why I don't like it, and this isn't to discourage anyone from using it, there are people who make amazing armor using Warbler. My personal experience is that even when you heat it up to the temperature it needs to be at without, you know, roasting it, it's still not as flexible a material as I would really like it to be. it still has quite a bit of stiffness in it, even without the internal mesh that WonderFlex has. WonderFlex is actually a mesh. It's like a fabric. It's impregnated with resin. Warble doesn't have any sort of internal additional structure to it. It is resin and some sort of structural additive, which I'll get to the Warble recipe thing later. But I find that when you're trying to bend the Warble around the ends, if you're not trying to do the sandwich method, because I only have so much Warble and it's not cheap, so I've been trying to wrap the Warble around the edges to get that nice rounded off finish. It does not make a very neat rounded off finish. It does not take hard bends well. It really doesn't. And even the smooth side of it still needs priming. I can tell already you can't just flout paint that stuff. It needs a lot of priming and it's going to need a lot of sanding. And so for that reason, I have found that once my sheet of Warble is used up, I'm actually probably going to go straight back to my original method, which was styrene overcraft foam and then paper mache or fiberglass for compound curves. It's just, it's easier, it's cheaper, it's much more flexible, and if I screw up, I don't have to worry about buying a whole new sheet. I know with Warble that you, if you screw up, you can, you know, heat it up and reform it. I have a sneaking suspicion that, like most plastics, you can only heat Warble a certain number of times before it starts to lose structural integrity, and then it starts to become brittle and you can't reuse it. All you can do is roll it up like clay and use it as decorative scraps. You can't use it as body pieces anymore. So I can't, you know, form greaves 5 times out of it. It doesn't work that way. So, you know, I'll still use it for this costume. I've already started with it. I need to keep going with it because otherwise I'm not going to have time to finish it. So I'll still use it for Pyrrha. But after that, I'm probably not going to go back to using Warble again. Even the transparent stuff, there are other alternatives that I have a feeling would work just as well that don't cost quite so much in addition to having to pay shipping. I can go to my local plastic supplier and get something similar. So there was that. And then I had the dreaded accident that a lot of seamstresses fear, which is to have your sewing machine die a month before a con. The clutch on my sewing machine went to where I had no control over the speed of my sewing machine. I pressed just a little bit on the pedal and it went zoom. And I pressed all the way pedal to the floor and it went zoom. And I just went up and down and it just went ee. It's like, oh,
I like the sound effects.
I thought you might. It's because I listened to Car Talk today.
Yeah.
So from that, I deduced that the clutch plates had either disintegrated or had become disconnected from the drive because I had no control at all over my sewing machine. And that's a bad idea to sew with an out-of-control machine. So I boxed it up and put it next to my trash can out in front, and within 12 hours, somebody had taken it. And I don't mean the trash man. Somebody stole my broken sewing machine from my trash man. Still boggles my mind. But, you know, that aside, I have a new one. I haven't even opened it yet, because I haven't had time, being that I was out of town. But I got new Brother machine, mostly because it's cheap. If I know it's going to break again, I'm not going to sit here and break the bank and buy a $600 machine because I don't need one. You know, a lot of my friends do embroidery. They'll do applique. They'll do fancy things with their machine. I don't. I only need my sewing machine to have a straight stitch, a zigzag stitch, a stretch stitch, and to be able to do buttonholes. That's okay. It. That's all I need in a sewing machine. Doesn't even have to be electric. It can be mechanical. That is fine.
That means Amber just needs a basic machine. And there's nothing wrong with that. Val does a lot of very fancy stuff, so she needs a more expensive machine.
For those that do fancy things when they sew, those machines are fan-freaking-tastic. For those that quilt, it's fan-freaking-tastic. I don't do complicated things with fabric. I do complicated things with props.
Mm-hmm.
So I just bought, you know, El Cheapo Walmart sewing machine. They didn't have the model I was looking for. I was actually looking for the next model down from the one I had bought from Joann's, but they didn't have any in stock. So I got the next closest thing. So I will be running this through its paces. My other one lasted 4 years. For a $100 sewing machine, not bad. This one was 80. So if I get 4 years use out of it, I will count myself happy. I get $20 use out of my sewing machine every year.
Given how much you use your sewing machine, that's actually pretty respectable. I'm surprised, like, the couple times that I freaked out about my machine breaking on me for only having it for 2 years. Yeah, I honestly, given how often we both sew, that's a lot of use for 4 years. I would be very happy with that.
Yeah, the only thing I was disappointed with, two things I was disappointed with. One, on the box, it says limited 25-year warranty. That's extremely misleading. There is only a 1 year warranty on the parts, and there is a 2 year warranty on the electronics. That 25 year is on the casting of the body itself, the yep. metal body that's on the inside. So folks, if you see that on the outside of your sewing machine box, I would go online and read their warranty paperwork first. Don't trust that just because it says 25 years that it's 25 years for everything. I was actually really disappointed that it was only 1 year on parts. It means they don't have faith in what they're making. But the other thing I was disappointed with is that at least on the $100 machine I bought, it had metal parts on it. Body was plastic, most everything else was plastic, but it still had metal parts. Bobbin winder was metal, the bobbin case was metal. The thread, the spooler that holds the thread, that was metal. On this, every single piece, excepting I think the needle shaft, is plastic. It's cheap as all get out. And I know I paid less for it, but really? Really? I mean, no wonder they've only got a 1 year warranty on parts, man. Those things are going to snap off if I look at them funny.
She says this, and you know what? Most sewing machines are just plastic pieces of crud. My Viking is the bobbin case, the bobbin shuttle. All the bobbin pieces are 100% plastic. There is very little metal in the machine other than the gears, and that's about it.
Which is fine and good for cheap machines. Just as they wear out, people are just going to throw them away, and that creates so much more waste than if you had all metal parts that aren't gonna break, because then you don't throw the sewing machine out, you just replace the broken parts instead of the whole machine, putting it out by your trash can and having somebody steal it.
Amber's still so surprised by this. I'm just like, it's a weekly
current still
here.
Shocked that clearly it was out next to the trash can, which means it was broken. Plus I scavenged all of the working parts from it, including the feet and the machine needle. So it's not only a machine that you have no control over, but it has no working parts in it. So unless they've got spare parts lying around and a spare clutch and know someone that can repair Brother sewing machines, then they're just going to throw it out in the trash too when they're done with it. I don't know. This is not the first time somebody has gone through my trash. Somebody went through 6 boxes of donations I had set out for charity that were clearly marked as donations. Somebody ripped off the tape on those and riffled through them too. So clearly somebody really likes going through my trash. Whatever is not physically in my house or locked up behind my fence is apparently like fair game.
Yep. I know she doesn't understand this, but there are people who actually throw away perfectly good sewing machines, who throw away perfectly good bookcases, and it's just people updating their furniture or whatever. You'd be surprised.
I had half a mind to take a Sharpie and write broken on the box.
They still take it.
Exactly.
In fact, they probably take it a lot sooner.
It's not any good for any parts unless they're looking for broken parts. More power to them, I guess. I've just... does not compute.
Yeah. Your brain doesn't think like, it's okay. It's okay.
Yeah. So in short, I will be putting pedal to the metal, literally, or pedal to the plastic, literally, trying to finish my cosplays, still waiting on Arda to update their restock list for next month so I can figure out if I'm going to be able to have Cosmos or Presea at Akon. If I can't get my wig parts in time, because I can't justify the purchase of an additional wig at this point, I will leave Cosmos and Presea here at home, and I will bring Rava, and I will probably end up having to bring Lena without her armor. Because, yeah, I'm bumming crash space in a room that has five people. There's not going to be much space for cosplay. I'll be lucky if I finish what I have. I'll be lucky if I finish both versions of Pyrrha. And I did get my nice box of fabric from fabric.com, which I have not opened yet either, so.
Oh my goodness. At least open it and double check it to make sure it's okay.
I have a lot to do. It happened to arrive right before Symphony. Right before I ended up having to get serious about practicing for Symphony. So, yeah, I have a lot to do.
You do. There are two things I want to add to that. First off, I want to show what Amber's talking about with the Warbla, because now I've kind of relegated the rest of my Warbla to being accessory pieces, which I think actually works better for the material. I don't like it in large chunks, but smaller chunks like this, which is going to be a brooch that I'm wearing, I like it more. But I'll try to take a picture of this and actually put it into the episode. It's a little bit easier to see. You can kind of see where the edges are, where you try to pull them over and stretch. It looks great on the front. But if you look from the sides and the bottom, it's like, oh, what the hell just happened? Something else that Amber doesn't have to worry about for Akon is lugging around the 20-pound camera equipment, because we're getting a new camera. Yay! I'm so happy about this. It's coming in really soon.
Now, we still have the old cam. It's actually listed. If you know anybody who needs a Canon XL1S, please have them check eBay. We do have a listing up. Ours is the one for $300. It's the only one for $300. And we've put in all the accessories. It's very well taken care of. It's in very good condition. Realistically, there is nothing wrong with it. It is only missing one component, which I have, you know, disclosed. But other than that, we're just trying to sell it to a good home. So if someone's looking for it, we're trying to sell it for $300 plus shipping. Hopefully, you know, fingers crossed that it will sell for what we're looking to get for it, even though it's not what we paid for it, because it will help us buy the accessories for the new cam. You know, we need spare memory cards, we need spare batteries, we may need a new tripod head, carry case, all that good stuff.
And it's just a matter of Amber and I have outgrown the older content. It's just gotten too old for our uses and too heavy for our uses. We just need something more compact, easier for us to carry around, and will last us a little bit longer. And just the way digital things are, it's what we got to do.
Plus, it was finicky in having to record events that were longer than 1 hour. Especially things like cosplay contests. It was too much of a hassle to have to switch out digital tapes at that point, because I kept not having a socket for my laptop to plug into. And I would very much like not to have to haul my laptop around to conventions.
Exactly. So yeah, new camera coming. I'm so excited.
We'll have new equipment. Hopefully befitting what I hope is our press status at Project Akon. Hint, hint. If any Project Akon staffers are watching, please let us know and we'll know about press. Because I haven't heard back yet.
We might need to ping them again. They're probably a little busy and preoccupied. It is what it is.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
I'm sure we will be. It's us.
Yep. And there may be other conventions added to our calendar in the near future.
Fingers crossed.
Yep. We are in negotiations, and that is all that we will say on the matter. But again, you know, if you guys know anybody who's looking for cosplay guests, we are more than happy to serve as long as it fits into our schedule. So I know I may be at SGC here in July, not as a guest, but helping out with the cosplay staff since they're looking for help. And possibly looking towards adding another con maybe here in November. We'll see. We have A&T in November too.
Oh yeah, that is in November. I can't. Oh man, my brain's all over the place with new job stuff. So I'm just trying to figure out like days off and making sure I get the time off for Dragon Con. That's like my biggest priority.
I need to submit to them to put us up as a potential for guests.
Probably a good idea.
Got to get all our ducks in a row because my job situation is changing here very shortly too.
Do not say ducks in a row. Evil. Evil.
Chicks in a row?
That's better? Fine. I'll take that. That's better.
Okay.
Many bossisms.
All right. So now that we've got updates out of the way for right now. Oh, what was the other thing I was going to mention? Oh, the Warbler thing.
Oh, yeah, the Warbler thing. Do the Warbler thing.
Somebody just shared today on Facebook a recipe for homemade Warbler. I've watched about half of the video. It's a YouTube video. And the guy is very entertaining. I mean, he's a solid educator for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not this formula works is another thing entirely. And frankly, it would be a makeshift Warbler. From what I know of the materials, in short, you know, I haven't watched the video all the way through it, but I've read the comments and I've watched most of it. It looks like what they've put in is PCL. It's polycarbolactone, aka friendly plastic, and sawdust. I think they end up using flour in some of the online comments because there's a lot of questions about flour. But friendly plastic has a very nasty property to it that does not bode well for people who live in Texas. It has a very low melting temperature. So it's kind of like PLA, polylactic acid, to where it melts very quickly if you apply low heat to it. Probably not what you want for armor, for one. Warbler doesn't seem to have that characteristic. You know, I can apply heat and it doesn't seem to do much until I apply adequate heat. But the other thing is that whenever you mix flour with things, you have to be careful of bacteria, which is why if you ever see paper mache recipes with flour in it, they'll tell you to add things like cinnamon, which is a natural antibacterial, or linseed oil, which is made from wool. Again, antibacterial. It's to prevent mold from growing in the flour. So definitely looks interesting, I will admit. I have my doubts because I have a feeling that if this had worked, somebody would have done it already. Those are pretty common materials in the cosplay world. But you may see me experiment with it in the near future for the heck of it, because there are suppliers that are fairly local that have friendly plastic. Sawdust is not difficult to get a hold of. I mean, I live near a Lowe's and a Home Depot up the street. So I may have to make weird things in my house. Just
nothing unusual.
No, nothing unusual. At least it would be a better biodegradable plastic than doing it the traditional way, which is with milk and vinegar, mm-hmm. which I can't imagine smells good.
No, probably it not.
It makes thermoplastic. It really does, and it's clear. And it dries hard. But I can't imagine it smells good. But
I'm just imagining the smell in my no.
If you guys get a chance, I believe it's on Akon's Facebook forums, where I can't remember her name. It's Lily something. I can't remember her last name on Facebook, but she shared the video. It's obsessive creative disorder, I think, is the person who put up the Warbler recipe. It's called Warbler Pie, P-I-E. Warbler pie. So if you guys are interested, have a look, you know, give them a critique, let them know if it works or not. I think that like most homemade substances, it's probably really neat to use in small quantities, like for brooches and jewelry and things. Not quite sure it's going to work so well for armor. We'll see.
If you also Google make your own Warbler, it's one of the first videos that pops up too.
It's been very popular given the price of Warbler.
Yeah.
The one thing that I could think of that would be actually really neat to use it for,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, potters, you may want to try and experiment with this because I always come up with weird ideas, is that if you could get it mixed and heated through and then extruded with maybe cake making tips, you know, cake decorator tips, that it would probably actually work really well for intricate decorations. So that you wouldn't have to use hot glue, which is messy and will melt thermoplastic. You wouldn't have to use styrene. You wouldn't have to use puffy paint. You wouldn't have to use, you know, glue. You could literally use really thin streams of plastic to make filigree decorations that would harden. So, you know, may want to give it a try.
I may have to consider this now. Because Amidala's headpiece has a lot of very intricate filigree on it before you start seeing some of the bulkier gold pieces. And I've been trying to figure out, okay, how do I want to do this? I'll probably just make like a small section of clay and have the filigree on it and just heat up the Wonderflex on top of it and go, pow, done. But that might be a good alternative. I'll have to think about this.
We'll get a bag of friendly plastic and split it between us.
There we go. I could always use friendly plastic for something with my Wonderflex, so.
Oh, definitely. Friendly plastic is friendly. And it can be purchased through Staples, I believe, if you guys have local Staples. The other place that you can primarily get it is Cosplay Supplies. I believe it's just cosplaysupplies.com. They're also a seller of Warbla, Wonderflex, and other thermoplastics. They also sell a Foss Shape. F-O-S-S, Foss Shape. It's another, I don't want to say thermoplastic because it's felt. It's like thermofelt.
That's a good way of putting it.
It is thermofelt. It is shapeable felt. Oh, while I'm thinking about it, really, really quickly, Disney came up with a 3D printer for fabric.
I saw that.
That was what I was going to mention earlier. It's not a printer per se because it does not build. It is a subtractive device. It's basically a glorified laser cutter to where it uses adhesive to layer up just flat squares of felt. And it uses a laser cutter to cut all the layers out so that you get a 3D shape in the end. They use it for plushies. Oh, I love science.
You couldn't really use that. Geeky things.
You couldn't use that for garments. Because the print bed is so small, but you could definitely use it for plushies. You could probably even use it to make cosplay pouches for people to carry around with their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you could use it for little things. You just couldn't use it for garments yet. But apparently there is a way to 3D print plastic that acts like fabric. I think that was on Wired a few months ago.
I'm not surprised by that.
I love science.
Science is cool. Science is awesome.
It's doing so many wonderful things.
For
in the
nerds.
World of cosplay, I know. All right. Speaking of nerds, shall we get on to our buddy, Mr. Harrison Crix?
Absolutely. Yeah. We were just talking about him yesterday, too.
We were graciously given a copy of Volpin's book, The Painting and Weathering for Props and Replicas, the one that basically caught on fire in the cosplay community and everybody just lost it. For good reason, I think. After having read this is the stuff, man. This is a really good book. And we're going to review it for you. So, that said, did you want to start since you had written yours up?
So you guys all know me. I am not a prop or an armor maker, but I subscribe to the principle that a great paint job can make any prop look really amazing no matter what the materials are. And the few props that I've made have been like out of paper mache or cardboard typically. But if you take the time to paint something and you paint it really well, no one is the wiser. And this book that Harrison, aka Volpin Props, has made is basically a really great primer for those who are prop makers, who want to be one, or they just want to learn how to make craft foam pieces look like metal, and that's essentially me. So I feel he does a great job at breaking down his content in a manner that is easy to digest without overwhelming the reader. One thing that I really liked about the book is how it's laid out. The format kind of reminds me of modern websites or do-it-yourself blogs. So instead of being inundated with a ton of text, there are preset backgrounds to the pages, and there are photos that guide the reader along. The descriptions were chosen very carefully, and it's very clear that a lot of edits took place to make the text feel like it belongs. It's not a series of steps that dictates you through a project, but it doesn't give you vague overviews either. So it's a good balance of providing you information while leaving you wanting more. I know for certain if and when, because it's probably going to be a when, that he makes another book, I'll be picking it up because of the way
he's already working on it, by the way.
See, there
it's
you
going
go.
To be holding and casting.
I'm definitely going to be buying one. I also
just
like
saying,
the fact.
Guys.
Yeah, I like the fact that he put progress photos on every single page, even images of what happens if you mess up. I think there's like one or two pages where he doesn't have a photo, and it's like in the troubleshooting section. So he put a ton of effort into this book, and you feel like you get a lot of content for just a tiny little price. So it's really, really cool. Next up, I want to talk about the chapters and the way that he presents the contents. So he's got a couple of sections. He covers safety equipment, which is very important, something Amber and I both preach. Painting accessories, which is something that a lot of people don't talk about because there are a ton of accessories when it comes to painting. And then you got base coating, you got spray paint basics. The majority of this book, however, does focus on the base finishes and the weathering techniques. Particularly the weathering techniques is something that I really responded to. A lot of people ask me questions like, man, how do you make your prop look age? How do you make your items look age? I mean, in particular, I recently made Morgan from Dragon Age, and she has this beautiful neck piece that tends to look really old and weathered. And I've had a ton of questions and people asking me how I did it. And it's like, that's not that difficult. You just do a little brown paint here, you wash it off there. And essentially, that's what Harrison's book does. It tells you exactly how to do these wonderful, awesome things. So that's something I really responded to and I really appreciated. And I actually learned some new weathering techniques in the process. I thought I knew a lot about paint. Apparently, I don't know as much as I thought I did. So that was kind of cool, too. Another thing that I saw in the book that I really appreciated, and it's on page 14, so it's in a spot that people are likely to catch this, testing. It's always good to test your paint before you move to your project, because that's how you figure out techniques. You can mess up as many times as you want to without it actually getting on your final piece, and you actually figure out if the weathering techniques or the painting techniques in the book will actually apply to your prop. Because here's the thing, Harrison tends to be more of a hard prop person, so a lot of plastics, a lot of woods. I like to do more of the foam and the softer stuff. I think the hardest I'll go is cardboard. So the type of paint that I would use on cardboard or craft foam is not going to be the same as the paint that I would use on plastics. Because, you know, spray paint on craft foam means dissolved foam. So that's essentially where testing comes in. So it's really important to test before you actually get to your final project. I also thought it was interesting that he has a section on decals. That's something that a lot of cosplayers don't think about. Most of us just kind of look at it and we're like, oh, we'll just hand paint the logo of Aperture Labs on our portal gun, done. It's like, no, you can actually do decals and there's certain ways of doing it. And it's actually kind of cheap. So I thought that was kind of cool that he covered decals as well. But in general, for his very first book, I think he's produced something that I would highly recommend to everyone to read. And it's not just for prop people. It's for people like me who only deal with fabric and do the occasional painting. I totally recommend it for people like me as well. A part of me wishes that he took like a page or two to explain about the different types of materials for his props in particular, and how paints may not work on all other materials. But overall, I think it's a really solid book. The techniques will take you a long way in your painting endeavors, and I'm really curious to see what he comes up with next. There we go. I'm done. Dueling review time. Now we go from the prop maker's perspective.
That was so professional of you, and I'm about to wing it.
Hey, you're good at winging it because in this particular situation, you know so much about props that I think you're going to have a different perspective on it than I am. Because me as the fabric person.
Enough.
Yeah. As me as the fabric person, I looked at it and I'm like, you know what? I could actually see using some of these techniques even in fabric paints. That's kind of cool. So.
The first thing I noticed was how he wrote it. And I don't mean the format. I mean the language that he used and the personality with which he wrote it. It came very much across like a painting for dummies, and I don't mean that in a negative sense. I mean it in a very positive sense. It's very kind of nonchalant without being flippant, to where it kind of, it's meant to put you at ease as you read this book so that you don't get the whole eyes glazed over because of scientific mumbo jumbo kind of look. It's very, very personable, the way that he wrote this. In general, the way that he set it out was very logical when you think about how you're going to paint your props. There is a method to the madness of making props. You make the base of your body, you sand it to death, not completely to death, maybe 99% of the way to death, because you don't want to kill your prop. And then once you're done sanding, you prime it, base coat, colors, and weathering, and then you seal it. And he presents his book that way. And then after the sealant comes things like decals, because those are considered additives at the end that not every prop will use. So it's a very logical layout. And it reads in the sequence that you would actually do on these props. So not only is it good just as a reading book, but you can actually have it as a manual sitting next to you as you're making your props, because you will do it in sequential order. So it is very good for that. Both the ebook and if there are physical books available, then I would recommend that as well. Very good quality on the photos. They're close up. They are clear. Not just the quantity of them, which he does have a lot of photos, but they're relevant. You know, these aren't just filler photos. These aren't just, hey, here's something I made. It's, this has meaning on this page. So he chose his photos very carefully, especially in the section where he talks about how spray paint works in a sort of high-level scientific sense. It's, he doesn't, you know, dive into the chemical composition of spray paint. Not quite like that. It's more of the, here is how spray paint is supposed to work in terms of what you are painting. And it's very useful to understand that, because there's some good tips in there, like heating up your spray paint can so that the paint becomes more fluid. And that helps you get a more even finish, since spray paint normally acts like little droplets, little micro droplets on the surface of your prop. Don't heat it to the point of explosion, and he does make a point of mentioning that. He does cover a lot of safety in the book, not just about equipment to wear, but when to use it. I mean, there are even little symbols in the book that he designates for the different safety features for the different stages of, you know, painting your props, which I found the explanations on the icons themselves were cute too.
I love those. The icons were adorable for like the geeky reasons.
I'm actually paging through the ebook. One of the very first icons says, you need less peen gas. Wear a mask. This process is toxic. And I smiled. Because it's like, yeah, I get it.
We know.
Yes. So it's in good humor. But the other thing that I really just kind of got across with this is that he takes the time to give you high-level explanations of just about every part of the process. It's very well documented. There are some things that I do kind of wish he would explain, like a glossary of terms, as it were. So a painting pyramid. There was a picture of one, but I didn't necessarily know what the heck a painting pyramid is or what it does. Likewise with a bench biscuit. The heck is a bench biscuit? So some of these, there's going to be a few terms in here that you may have to Google. I certainly did. Because there are some things in here that aren't explained. Maybe because they're not relevant, I'm not sure. Or maybe because this is a high-level discussion as opposed to individual materials. But, you know, there were a couple places where I wish there had been a little more explanation of what the heck is this. Well, maybe people who paint all the time, maybe they already know. Maybe I'm just ignorant. Very, very possible. But he keeps it at a very general level of discussion without getting bogged down in the details, which I think is very good, both for people who are just starting out and people who have had a little bit of experience but haven't quite gotten down into the nitty-gritty of it. For the more advanced prop makers, there's still something in the book for you, but you may crave a little more of the in-depth discussion on, you know, particular paint compositions or particular combinations of types of paint. That isn't really done so much here. So maybe there will be a sequel. You never know. Painting and Weathering Part 2. Since he is working on a sculpting book, Molding and Casting, that will hopefully come out soon as well. And that will actually, it'll be the prequel to the Painting and Weathering because it actually happens first. You do the Molding and Casting first, then you do the Painting and Weathering. I didn't find as much use for me personally in the Weathering part of the book because I like the new look on my things. I like the unused, the shiny, shiny armor. I don't like my things to look dirty and aged because then it makes me want to take a little buffing cloth and scrub the dirt off of it so it looks clean again. So that part, not so much for me. But for those who do like the look, which in the book he'll emphasize it as telling a story, that's actually the tag for Weathering. It's you are telling a story. For those who do that, it is very, very helpful. And he goes into procedural detail on how to achieve various looks. So if you want to make something look like metal, here are the materials you need. Here is how you do it. If you want to make something look cracked, which that was the coolest technique I saw in the book, the cracked plaster look. You get it with glue. The heck, man, I never would have thought of that. And it looks so good. Not only is that something you could use on props and masks and things, but if you're a jewelry maker and want to make like faux stones, that would be a fantastic way of making turquoise. And then just, you know, dry brushing it with some black to fill in those cracks that you just made. I mean, these techniques are applicable to other things if you're creative with it. It doesn't just have to be limited to props and armor. I'm sure some of this, like the procedure of making something look dirty, you can do that on fabrics. You don't have to do it on your props. You can do it with what you're wearing. And it's a little less dirty than actually going out in the rain with it or walking out to the beach in it. It's a little safer and a little bit cleaner.
I can say from experience of having dirtied up a ton of things for commissions, I prefer doing the fabric painting method, let me tell you. And I've learned a couple things through this book, so I can update that.
Yeah, so I think both of us in sum total will definitely say this is a highly recommended book, well worth your money. It would be well worth your money at twice the cost. And it's, I mean, we're not trying to be fangirls over this book, but it's a really well-written book. You know, we've both done technical documentation for our jobs. So we're not only looking at this as cosplayers who happen to be fans of Vulpen, but we're also looking at this from a documentation point of view and from the point of view of people who do occasionally make props who aren't necessarily advanced at it. Because heaven knows, I'm no Vulpen. I am no punished props. I do not do this for a living. I am not that good. There's always more to learn. And I think we would support this book as a way of continuing that learning process.
Absolutely. I believe in the power of paint, and Vulpen will make you believe in the power of paint too.
Safely.
Safely. With respirators and gloves involved.
Yes. So you guys can actually head over to his website, which I do believe is vulpenprops.com. I'm going to double check real quick.
Oh, we don't have this saved already?
Yeah, it is. His secondary site, which doesn't look like it's been updated as often anymore, is vulpenprops.blogspot.com. I think that's the archival page. But you can order the book, go to vulpenprops.com. There is a section called shop, and that is where you go. It is actually the very first thing listed, and it is, in fact, $8. Currently, it looks like it's only offered in ebook form. I do not see on here a book form yet.
he discussed it when we had that interview with him, that he was looking to potentially making a print version of it. So it may be coming out. It just might be a little while.
Yep. Still not quite there yet. And also on that same page, he also offers copies of Bill Duran, Punish Props, his Foam Smith trilogy. You can get caught that as well. So while you're there, why not pick up both? Get the Foam Smithing trilogy and get Painting and Weathering for armor and props.
This
goodbyes
just means
all around.
That Val needs to like consider making a sewing book, because we have all these props and armoring books. There's no sewing stuff.
You
I need to get on this.
Better. You need to beat God Save the Queen Fashions to it.
Oh, well, then shit. If Catherine's doing it, then I'm I ain't doing it. If Catherine's doing it, I ain't doing it.
She's already started putting out preview images, so she's probably getting close to publication.
She'll kick my butt at it, so it's fine. She can have it.
I'm actually waiting to interview her when it comes out.
Of course you are.
I'm always looking for these things.
Heidi, we need your help. Could you get us to talk to Catherine real quick?
Oh no, I direct communication, but we also need to talk to Heidi. And Something Clever Cosplay, since they were the USWCS cosplay champions, which congrats to them. I don't think we said that since last episode.
No, we didn't, because WCS was running at the time.
World Cosplay Summit championships for the United States were held, and our local home girls, Something Clever Cosplay, won.
What?
And we took them out to celebrate with ramen last weekend. Oh, it was good, and there was cake, and there was all sorts of good stuff.
It was an unofficial birthday for me. Yay!
That too. Everything was all going on the same day.
I know, and it's just been like, that's what last weekend was, and that's what this weekend is, and it's just like, okay.
Just so much going on. Just within the last couple of weeks and over the next couple of weeks.
It's con season. It's getting busy. Life and con are busy.
Yeah, not just for cons. We've actually got an interview coming up next weekend with another cosplay group that we think you guys will enjoy. And we will be having a dual podcast with another set of podcasters, actually, on, I believe it's the 17th. We'll actually be guests on their show. So there's a lot of...
There's a lot of stuff going on, man.
Coming together of the podcasts here within the next few. And we've actually been asked by another podcast to join them as well. So it's going to be very busy for the next couple of months for us.
Very busy.
Still don't know what to do with being internet famous. Still don't.
It is what it is. I told you.
I know. And actually, if you want to go ahead and introduce the next segment, since this is yours, I'm going to go check our web stats for the month.
Absolutely. So everybody, I've been teasing this for maybe like 2.5-3 years now, and I finally sat my butt down and did this. We have a hand sewing tutorial. Congratulations, you broke me. It's done. I finally got inspired by a correspondent who told me, you know, I think you guys have already done one of these. No, we haven't. And Valerie felt really bad. So she made a hand sewing tutorial. Enjoy. Good day, Potters. So today, finally, we're going to cover a topic I've been meaning to do for ages, which is hand sewing. I started out learning how to sew by hand, not through machine, and during my time cosplaying, I found that it come in handy to get into nooks and crannies where machine typically can't go without it turning into a giant thread mess, but it'll also help you finish a garment with a flourish that you typically don't see with machines. And if you happen to be at a convention, something happens to snag, or you pop a seam, or a seam breaks, hand sewing really comes in handy for those emergency situations, so all around very useful to have. The tools that you need are going to be fairly simple. You need the sewing needle, you need thread, scissors, and fabric. It's pretty simple, right? So a thimble is optional for heavier weight fabrics such as leather or pleather, where you need to push the needle through, but it's not required. I personally use pliers because they basically do the exact same thing, it's just maybe half a second slower.
This first segment I'm going to cover is going to focus on the types of needles, because there are a lot of hand sewing needles out there, and if you go to the craft store, it can get a little overwhelming. The first basic sewing needle that we're going to cover is called the Sharp. It is one of the more commonly used of all of the hand sewing needles. They are long and have a sharp end, like the name implies, and they can be used on most fabrics. Next one is the ballpoint needle, and if you're using a knit, this is the type of needle that you should be utilizing. They have a rounded end, so they allow the needle to slide through without taking the strands of fabric with it. Next up is the leather needle, and it should be very obvious that it's different from the others. They are very big, they're very bulky, and they're very pointy. You use these on, well, what else? Leather. They work for pleather, a lot of thicker fleeces, anything that's a heavyweight fabric, and it's specifically designed to pierce through those heavier fabrics. Last are the embroidery and quilting needles. The embroidery needles are like the sharps, but they have a longer eyelet to allow the embroidery floss to pass through with ease. Quilting needles have a shorter eye, and they're smaller, so they allow for tighter stitches. They are specifically designed for embossed flourishes for garments, so don't use these unless you intend to embroider or to quilt. So now that we've covered the needles, let's move on to the sewing. If you're doing this for the first time, I recommend starting with a sharp because, again, that's the more common of all the hand sewing needles, and it's easier to get accustomed to how to do hand sewing once you've been using a sharp. You should also use a scrap piece of fabric to get the hang of sewing by hand. First up is the basting stitch. Now this is used to temporarily hold two pieces of fabric together that may shift as you sew. When basting, it's a good idea to use a contrasting thread so it's easier to remove the stitch after the permanent sewing is complete. And it is pretty simple. You're basically just weaving your needle in and out of the fabric so it looks like a long dashed line. The stitch is usually about a quarter of an inch in equal length. Next is the running stitch, and it's done in the same way as the basting stitch, but with short, evenly spaced stitches, usually about 1/16 or 1/8. Depending on your fabric, a smaller stitch for lighter weight fabric is recommended. You can do this one on your sewing machine, and it's typically recommended that you do so, but it's a great way for gathering or quickly mending a seam that has come apart. The back stitch creates a very strong seam, and this is one that I typically use whenever I'm hand sewing. It's used on heavier or dense fabrics and often to repair a seam. So this is how you want to do it, and I've marked out the numbers on the fabric. You bring your needle up through fabric at point 1, then you insert your needle through the fabric at point 2, then you drag your needle all the way to number 3 and you bring it up there, and then you point it down at number 4. And then you just keep on repeating until you reach the end of your seam. And just so that you guys know what it looks like on the back, you're going to end up using a lot of thread, so keep those pairs of scissors handy because you're going to be needing them. The overcast stitch. Now, this is used to finish cut edges on fabrics that tend to ravel, and it's pretty simple. You just start on one side of the edge that you want to see finished, and then you make a series of equal spaced and diagonal stitches that loop around the edge of the fabric. And in this case, see this line that I have on the fabric that I've made? Assume that that's the edge of the fabric. And you're essentially making a bunch of zigzag lines. Alright, so next we have the slip stitch, also known as the ladder stitch. This one is really good for closing pillows or creating a seemingly invisible seam. And in this particular demonstration, again, this line is going to be the fold. So pretend that the top of the line is one set of fabric and the bottom of the line is the other part of the fabric. You're going to slip your thread and needle inside the fold to hide the knot. Then you're going to bring the needle out through one of the folded edges. And then you're going to pick up a couple of threads and start working through the fold again. And then just keep on going down the line. Now you'll probably see that this is very similar to the overcast stitch, but instead of just going at the edge of the fabric, you're bringing two pieces of fabric together. Also, unlike the overcast stitch, these are going to be much smaller, much closer stitches, so be very careful of this. Last but not least is the blind hem stitch. I hate this stitch so much. A lot of people will use this stitch as a way to hide seam lines for when you're hemming garments. So if you look at a pair of like really like work slacks, just pull a pair of work slacks from your closet, you'll see that the bottom is nicely cuffed, but there isn't a hem there. I'll tell you what, there really is a hem. It's called a blind hem stitch. So in this situation, what I'm going to do is I'm drawing a line again. Imagine that we're looking at the back of the fabric where most of the thread's going to be pulling through. You're going to slip your needle through the fold to hide the knot. Then you're going to bring the needle out through the folded edge. And using the point of your needle, pick up a few threads from the front side of the project. And you're going to push the needle through and then diagonally go back over. Now, this is a little bit difficult to see in this situation, and I think it's best represented when you actually see a folded fabric. So, here's a folded fabric, and I'm going to show you guys again how this works. So, we slip the needle through the fold to hide the knot, and then we're going to go through that first layer of fabric. It's not going to go through the second layer, just the first layer. And you're going to push the needle just through, like, one or two little threads from the fabric that are going to be in the front. And as you can see, it is very difficult and very finicky to do so. But once you get it, you push the needle through, then you go back to the first folded edge, and you repeat the process. It is very, very time consuming. But once you're all done, I'm going to show you guys what it looks like in the front. See, you can't even tell that the stitches is there. Now you have to be really, really looking to find those little black dots where the stitches are. But for the most part, if I were to go all the way through this entire piece, you wouldn't be able to tell. The final thing that I want to cover is how to secure your stitch when you're done or if you're hitting the end of your thread. What I like to do is a back stitch. So essentially, you're just going back through and making one more loop through the stitches that you've already done. But before you pull the thread all the way through, what you want to do is slide your needle through that loop to create a knot. I personally like to do it twice. Some people only like to do it once. I like to create a stronger knot. So I pass the needle through twice, and then I pull, and that creates a knot. If you want a stronger bond, you do this two more times. You can use that same loop to do so, or what I like to do is I like to go back another stitch to create another knot and then double knot it there. So those are the basics of hand sewing. I hope you all enjoyed this segment, and as always, if you have any questions, feel free to email them in to podcast@cospod.org.
Trying to figure out.
So I guess we came back from the segment then, didn't we?
Yeah, we're back.
We're back, guys. By the way. We've been talking for the last 10 minutes, but we're back.
It happens.
No, it's cool to see where people are coming from to listen and watch the show. That's kind of nifty that we've got that much reach now. It's like, wow, okay.
And it's just growing and growing. I'm really, really surprised that our web host hasn't told us, you guys need to upgrade to the next level plan.
Actually, this kind of makes sense. Yeah, because, okay, so over the weekend, I asked Amber if I could clean up our inbox because we just had a lot of email just sitting in the inbox. Nothing was organized, and it was really irritating Val to the point that, can I organize this, Amber? Sure. Okay, so I just made folders for each year, and then one stuff for this year, you know, once we've completed it, it goes into that folder. Great, awesome. First year, we had like 20 emails. Second year, we had like 40. Third year, we have like 180. This year, we've already had almost like 100 plus, and I'm like, wow. It kind of shows how we're growing, that people are contacting us as often as they are. So you crazy. Yeah. That's cool, though.
Indeed. Let's see. By web hits, we've had a little over 17,000.
That's See, pretty kind of, darn good.
We're edging up, at least from last year, because our big month is almost always July.
Of course, yeah, that's after
post-ACON.
Yeah.
And the months, the 2 months building up to it, May and June, tend to be really big months too.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still, we're closer to averaging 20,000 now than we were 15 per month.
Awesome. That's really cool.
We are definitely, definitely getting bigger.
Yay! Applause, applause. This is a lot for two ladies, because it's just us. It's us and
still.
Still just us, but it's also our correspondents who have been so gracious in giving us content, and for all you guys for contacting us and giving us convention reviews and photos. I mean, we literally could not keep doing this without all of your support and all your help. So thank you guys. We really mean that from the bottom of our hearts. Thank you.
In a very literal sense.
In a very literal sense.
Because both of us are undergoing quite a bit of job upheaval.
Life changes.
Yeah, and that, the offer for content, or the petition for content, extends to all of you guys. If you go to a convention, no matter how small, even if it's a mini convention that has 50 people, or if it's a mega convention that has 50,000, either way, if you guys want to send us pics, or a short little 5-minute review, or if you just want to send us raw video from the convention, as long as it's family friendly, we will happily accept content. We don't sell it for commercial use. We don't take credit for it ourselves. We give you the credit. All we do is share it. And then we'll put it up on our social media too, so that everybody else can kind of enjoy it by proxy. And, you know, we can all enjoy conventions and cosplay around the world, since most of us unfortunately can't travel all around the world. Yeah.
And we've had reviews from as far as Kansas all the way out to Germany, and then everything in between. So
you've
I
had a review from Sweden.
Yep. There you go.
Yeah.
So yeah, we will take any and all content.
We actually had an offer of content for Denver Comic Con. We've actually got fellow podcasters from the Honest, Open, and Vulnerable podcast who are going to allow us to share their footage from Denver Comic Con.
Awesome. Good.
So we'll be able to bring that to you guys as well. And of course, all credit will go to them. We just happen to be sharing it with you. So if anybody else has, you know, similar offers, we will happily share. And likewise, our footage is pretty much free for use as long as you don't alter it, with the exception of cutting it for time. You can't chop it up and mix it, in other words, but you can shorten it for time, as long as you link to the original and you don't sell it for commercial use. Other than that, we're pretty much open. If you guys want to share our footage, go right ahead.
Mm-hmm.
We are governed by Creative Commons, non-commercial, non-derivative license.
As it says at the end of every podcast.
Yes. And at the bottom of our website too.
Val is very studious about editing that in every time.
All right. I believe we are good for this episode.
I think we are too. This is a very productive episode. We got a lot accomplished.
And a lot of content.
Darn right we did.
All right. So we will see you guys in episode 89 of CosPod, the podcast for all things cosplay. As usual, here is our information about how you can reach us on all our various social media. You can also use these if you guys have any content that you would like to share with us. If you have any suggestions, you know, if you'd like us to be a guest at your convention, if you have any comments, questions, all of these things, you can reach us here. We will also have upcoming interviews. We're also going to be getting into crunch time for Project ACON, so we may get a little more frantic as we get closer to June.
I'm biting my nails in anticipation.
Just giving you guys a heads up on that. If you suddenly see us start going a little more gray or a little more frazzled, that's why. But best of luck to everybody who's prepping for conventions over the next month or two, and we will see you guys next episode. Bye, everybody.
Bye.